Despite only releasing 5 main series games in over 20 years, Oddworld Inhabitants are frequently held up among the very finest developers. The reason for their spaced out titles comes down to their level of detail and trailblazing mechanics, not to mention the meticulous auteur who drives it all, Lorne Lanning. Abe's Odyssey still influences platformers today, while Stranger's Wrath redefines several genres with huge success. In fact, I personally count the Oddworld series among my favourite games. I've played them ever since they first showed up on PlayStation 1 demo discs, where I was delighted by their trademark mix of silly humour with heavy political themes. I'd go on to play them late into the night with my dad, who was possibly more hooked on them than me. They remain the only games he's ever seriously played, and they've been incredibly important to me ever since. Hello, I'm Lee Tyrrell. Follow me into the Sound Test, where I look in depth into video game audio and music, along with the very people who crafted it. In this episode, I'm joined by Oddworld's longtime composer, Michael Bross. Having been in charge of the majority of its sound design, Michael was the perfect person to provide insight on the entire series. But when exactly did he join the team?
It was back in 2001, and Oddworld was in development on Munch's Odyssey. So they were looking for a composer, a sound designer and composer to work with them. They were in the last 6 months of the project, and they didn't really have anybody who's currently working on it from that end. They posted it was actually a position for a sound designer, and so I responded, and about 500 other people responded too. So I lived on the East Coast of the United States, and they are in California. And so when I interviewed with them, everything went well with the phone interviews. And basically when it came time to have me come out, they said, well, we're not sure if we're going to hire you until we meet you in person. And so if we hire you, we're going to need you to stay for 2 or 3 weeks while we hit a certain milestone. But if it doesn't work out, if the interview doesn't work out, then we'll just fly you home. So they said, if you're going to come out, though, that means you're going to have to pack a bag and come out for 2 or 3 weeks, just in case you stay. So I went out and I interviewed, and that day I went through the series of interviews with Lorne and Sherry and some of the producers and other people. And by the end of the day, they said, yeah, we're going to hire you.
Before we delve into Michael's work for Oddworld, let's rewind. Munch's Odyssey was the third title in the series, preceded, of course, by Abe's Odyssey and Abe's Exodus in 1997 and 1998, respectively. There's plenty in the audio of these games worth talking about, which was handled by Ellen Myers and Josh Gabriel. Though I was unable to arrange interviews with them, I'll do my best to cover their toils on my own. The music of Abe is industrial and sparse, in stark contrast to its contemporaries from the time. It helps to add tension to your escape and rescue plans, constantly evoking the cavernous factories you infiltrate. Driven in large part by percussion, it also leaves ample room for the thought processes of intense puzzle solving. And when exploring the wilds of Oddworld, we hear native rhythms echo across alien vistas, reminding us that Earth is very far away indeed. The music of those first two games also takes on a dynamic element, reacting to many actions made by the player. If seen or chased by an enemy, the backing adds an extra layer of danger. Since much of Abe's Odyssey and Exodus relies on you taking over or possessing the bodies of your foes, the music accommodates this by reflecting their personalities in the score. Oddworld brought a lot of care to their audio, which many other platformers would take years to catch up with. The GameSpeak system of their debut games, which allows you to converse with and affect non-player characters, is still yet to be matched or outdone in a satisfying way. Through utilising 8 simple commands like
hello
and of course
follow me,
you can speak to both friends and foes, allowing you to further progress. Voiced by Oddworld's principal creator, Lorne Lanning, GameSpeak set Abe apart in a big way. It cemented the character, his surroundings, and his plight in people's minds, and brought a subjectivity to the games rarely seen in other platforms. Using it in other ways could have a profound impact on solutions, and even the narrative. But it doesn't stop there for Abe's Odyssey and Exodus. Putting the music and GameSpeak to one side, there's just as much thought put into sound effects. Every individual footstep rings out, and the movements of NPCs on adjacent screens can be heard in the distance. Grenades beep as you cook them, security lasers buzz when you penetrate them, and meat grinders whir out their rhythms as they dance up and down and side to side. This hard work is audible to all players, but it's so well done that it can even give the blind enough to complete the games. Terry Garrett, who lost both of his eyes by the age of 10, was able to get through both Abe's Odyssey and Abe's Exodus with nothing but their sound design. As he outlines in an interview with Oddworld themselves, Terry needed nothing more than a pair of good quality speakers, literally duct taped to the arms of his chair, to reach the end of the games. Though this makes Terry a bona fide badass, it also highlights just how good their audio truly is. By 2001, and Oddworld's third game, Munch's Odyssey, the developers had parted ways with Ellen Myers and Josh Gabriel. This time expanding into 3D platforming and acting as a launch title for the original Xbox, Munch's Odyssey had a tumultuous path to release. With the freshly hired Michael Bross in tow, he didn't have much time to adjust to composing its music.
I went right from being interviewed right into working the next day. And so it was pretty rushed and pretty crazy, the whole production. I think that was one game I do wish that I would have been able to have more time. There were a lot of technical issues just because it was an Xbox launch title. And there were a lot of things, and not just on our side, but on Microsoft's side, where, as we're trying to build a game on top of the platform, they're also developing the platform. And so we came across some audio bugs that were more low level that were causing issues for us. So it was a lot of fun, but it was also pretty stressful. Like I mentioned, I came in at the end of the project, and there was a lot to do because the game over, as you might know this, it changed a fair amount over a period of time, and went, I think it was originally supposed to be published on the PlayStation, right? And then moved to the Xbox. And so you know, I wasn't there when that happened, you know, when that transition happened, but I'm sure that there was a lot of, and I didn't really see a lot of the stuff that happened then, but, you know, in going through other games in development, that Oddworlds games over the course of development typically will change a fair amount because there's so much iteration involved. But at the end, for me, it was pretty crazy because there was a lot that needed to be done. We didn't have a lot of time. And it was also a launch title for the first Xbox. So nobody knew. Everybody was trying to figure out, you know, it's like trying to fly a plane while you're, it's trying to build a plane while you need to fly it. That's basically what we were doing.
Although Michael didn't join Oddworld Inhabitants until late in the game's development, he still took a lot of time to add nuance and detail to its audio. Munch's Odyssey again utilizes reactive music, which adapts to the on-screen action, while sound effects help guide the player with intuitive chimes. Expressing feelings and prompting them was largely in Michael's hands.
You know, it's been a long time since I've worked on that stuff, and I can't actually even remember the details of working on it, but I do know that we did discuss a lot the idea of using pitch to convey energy and emotion, you know, not just through sound design, but through music too, and you'll hear elements of that in both, where maybe we have a scene where the tension is building, or a gameplay element where the tension is building, and you'll hear in the music or the sound design the pitch might be rising, whereas if you have a release in tension or less tension, you might hear the pitch falling. So we did think about that a lot, and I mean, it's a kind of a key. It's something that really helps. I mean, it's a really basic element to use, but really effective element to use in creating tension.
Continuing the tone of its predecessors, the majority of Munch's Odyssey's music is remarkably sparse. Thick blankets of synth underscore your exploration, while electronic beats kick in when combat overtakes puzzles. The soundtrack is Oddworld personified, and a large part of the setting's character. But what led to this particularly ambient direction?
I think it was a couple things. I think Lorne pushed it a little bit in that direction, and I think the game just kind of had that. It was the first 3D game that Oddworld had done, right? And so it just had this element that felt, it just felt like it needed more of that. So I think that's the reason why we went that direction.
New to the team, and pressured to deliver in a short amount of time, Michael had a lot on his shoulders. It didn't help that some of the equipment he relied on to produce Munch's Odyssey's music was perhaps less than perfect. Though he'd make use of much more powerful tools by Stranger's Wrath, Michael still provided excellent work, helping significantly to define Oddworld's atmosphere.
The tools now for game audio are really a lot better and a lot more powerful. And I think back then they were just starting to... Microsoft had created this tool called Exact. Maybe I'm getting too technical here with that. But it was basically a tool to allow sound designers to more easily implement and control the audio that they put in the game so they could create better stuff. And so Microsoft had come up with this tool to use, but that tool actually didn't really come into play until after I got until after Munch's Odyssey shipped. But there was an earlier tool that really wasn't that great to work with. But, you know, sometimes you have to work with what you have. And so I did the best I could do.
Oddworld's next release took the series down a completely different path. Munch's Odyssey may have brought Abe's puzzle platforming to a 3D arena, but Stranger's Wrath, which hit the market in 2005, left all of that behind. Styled as both a third and first-person shooter, the game would even further set itself apart with a wealth of influences from film and television westerns. Instead of a slave messiah, Stranger's Wrath casts you as a hardened outlaw bounty hunter. The release earned an almost universal positive response and is still popular today thanks to a slew of well-made ports. Tasked with scoring this alien Wild West, how did Michael approach its sound?
Up to that point, we had Abe and Munch, and there was some consistency there. And I think once we started working on Stranger's Wrath, it was definitely an Oddworld game, right? But it was also this, it had this kind of, it was definitely inspired by Westerns, film Westerns, old film Westerns, spaghetti Westerns. So there was that element too, and having to think about that and how to weave that sound in, or weave it in and do it in a unique way that would work with the overall Oddworld sound.
Among the ways that Michael achieved that mix was through the use of guitar. In previous Oddworld releases, guitars were rarely heard, outside of a few cutscenes. But by holding back and letting simple riffs and sustained notes sit in the mix, Michael killed two birds with one stone. Not only did it lend itself to the minimal sound already associated with Oddworld, but it also gave the game that all-important Western tinge reminiscent of all those legendary scores. Since it's so wonderfully done in Stranger's Wrath, it's surprising to hear that Michael had never actually played a guitar before writing its soundtrack.
I wanted to have guitar in the game, and I wanted to be able to use guitar. And so initially I was, I pitched the idea of bringing in a guitarist and doing some recordings and Lorne, he didn't really want me to do that. He likes to have things really flexible and be able to iterate and change. And the problem bringing somebody in is that once we record it, we record it and there's not much you can do with it after that. I mean, you can edit it and do some things, but the recording is the recording. And if we have to change it, then we have to bring the guitarist back in. And so he didn't want to do that because it was going to be too slow and it would cause a lot of problems from a production standpoint. So my idea was, I said, if you're not going to let me bring in guitarists or live musicians, then let me learn, then buy a guitar for me and I'll learn to play it. And then so I learned basically how to play guitar, and then I was the one who played the guitar on the soundtrack.
Alongside these new guitar flourishes, Stranger's Wrath keeps old fans comfortable with the signature tribal rhythms heard throughout all of Oddworld. It's as if the beats come from the hands, or paws, of the planet's natives. Without them, the game just wouldn't have felt faithful to the series. But, mixed with Western-inspired sounds, they still managed to afford Stranger's Wrath with the fresh feeling it deserved.
That's kind of part of the Oddworld sound, this whole, percussive native feeling, at least to me. And so maybe I leaned on it in a different way than previously, but it was definitely something that I actively incorporated into the sound of that soundtrack. I wanted to bring a percussionist, but again, that was discouraged. So I said, okay, well, I want to take percussion lessons, pay for my percussion lessons. And they were willing to do that. They were happy to do that. And so I took about 6 months worth of percussion lessons. I'm not a great percussionist. I'm a functional percussionist. But I do end up playing a lot, you know, a lot of percussion on any tracks I work on. So I think the one thing I learned from being there working on the Odd War projects was I really learned to be self-sufficient in a lot of ways. And it's really been a benefit to me.
Though taking up these skills specifically for Stranger's Wrath, Michael used his newfound knack for percussion in some intriguing ways. Most music you'll hear has a time signature of 4-4, which means that four beats fit into each bar, or that, when counting along, you naturally want to count in sets of four, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Complex time signatures like 7-8 don't often show up in general, and they're even harder to find in video games. 7-8 essentially means that your count would go something like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's an unusual rhythm, but it feels more at home in the odd world of Stranger's Wrath, where it punctuates an early tussle with Filthy Hands Floyd.
Odd meters are something I've been interested in, and not that I use them a lot, but every once in a while I'll sit down and I'll work on something, and I think working with an odd meter just kind of feels right. It has a different feel, and for some of those particular tracks or particular scenarios for Stranger's Wrath, it just felt like it worked better. I think that's the interesting thing about like 7-8 or 7-4 or 5-8 or, you know, whatever odd meter that you would work in, is that it definitely has a groove to it, but it also has a, I don't want to say it's not awkward, but it's definitely not awkward, but it definitely adds a strange tension to the music.
Tension is integral to a game like Stranger's Wrath, which features a large amount of stealth in its gameplay. Beyond instrumentation, or the actual melodic or rhythmic content of the music, technology presented Michael with ample opportunities to control that tension. It comes back to Oddworld's old trick of letting reactive music bounce between varying moods when appropriate. It's beautifully implemented in Stranger's Wrath too. Able to switch from contemplative ambience to busy battle music with impressively smooth transitions.
There's always a framework you have to think about when working on any game, and I think that game was no different. I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do we approach music from a, you know, interactive or reactive standpoint and a game state standpoint, you know, thinking about the states of the game and what's happening in the game, and how do we tie that to the action in the game? How do we make the music flow with the action of the game itself? It always takes a little time to work that out and think it, you know, and think it through and figure out what is going to work and what doesn't work for the game. And I think we kind of figured that out. The game was in development for 3 years, and I want to say that I probably started experimenting with that idea, you know, the framework that we had come up with pretty early on, and came up with something that I think we mostly, I mean, there were definitely exceptions, but we mostly stuck to the core ideas of the of what we came up with. Basically, how it worked was there were three, at least for most of the gameplay, but for the gameplay itself, I created three different levels of tension, and one was, we had the low-level tension, which was more ambient, and then the mid-level tension, which kind of represented when you're nearing danger or getting close to an enemy or a dangerous area. And then then the third layer, which was just straight out, you know, used for combat. And maybe layer is not the right word to use. They were really pieces that were unique themselves, each tension layer. I composed them in such a way where they all work together. So if you went from the low intensity layer to the high intensity layer immediately, it felt more natural.
Michael's music for Stranger's Wrath struck such a chord that it's even been released on vinyl, solidifying it as a key part of the game's success. As such, when development began for Abe's Odyssey New and Tasty, a remake of their very first title, Michael was the obvious choice to craft the audio. He may not have worked on Abe's Odyssey's initial release, but as New and Tasty's name suggests, Oddworld were keen to set their new version apart. Yet, at the same time, it was important that the score and sound effects stayed faithful. So how did Michael pull off this balancing act and decide when to use something old or when to write something new?
Sometimes it had to do with whether the original asset existed. And Abe's Odyssey was old enough where some of the original assets for the game, including audio, it couldn't be found in the archive. And I have no idea what happened to that stuff. Some of it we found, but not, there was a lot of it that was missing. The stuff that was there, we ended up trying to, you know, we ended up using, and then it really depended. You know, some of it I tried to duplicate a little bit, but also put a twist on it. And so it was kind of a combination of everything. I think Lauren left it up to me for the most part. And then as he reviewed material, you know, he gave feedback as to whether he wanted it to be closer to the original or not. New and Tasty was a remake of Abe's Odyssey, right? And so with the remake, they wanted to do something, you know, it was old, but they also wanted to do something new. And so it was a combination of both of them. And so sometimes we, you know, tried to take the original idea from a musical standpoint and modernize it.
Abe's Odyssey New and Tasty was a risk for Oddworld, and one that would thankfully pay off. The game pleased old fans and new, and Abe's adventures through Rupture Farms, Scribania, and Paramonia were revitalised by Michael's updated music and sound effects. Following a positive reaction, another remake was soon announced, this time for Abe's Exodus. now known as Soulstorm, we're still waiting for a definitive release date at the time of recording this podcast. Outside of an engaging alternate reality game, which I previously wrote about, and some character designs, details have been scarce and tentatively thin on the ground. A non-disclosure agreement meant that Michael couldn't go into too much depth when we spoke, but I asked him how much he's involved in this new project.
I worked on the beginning of it in the first year of development and created some music and sound design for it. And then I actually have moved on to some other projects, so I am currently not working on it. I guess the fear is that games always go through so much iteration from beginning to end that maybe I think that material would end up in there. Let's hope.
With 3 games out of 5 so far, Michael Bross has been indispensable in establishing the Oddworld sound. It would be a shame not to hear his work in Soulstorm. And I think all fans share in his hope that it will end up in the final release. Fortunately, we'll always have his existing music to enjoy, whether it's as a part of the games it was written for, or completely on their own. New and Tasty's soundtrack has, like Stranger's Wrath, been released on limited vinyl, and videos of Michael's tunes on YouTube gather thousands of views. Oddworld's audio has always been one of the series' greatest strengths. After all, how many other companies can say that the blind are just as capable of finishing their games? Their sound design and music give landscapes, characters, and the most incidental of movements an extra weight. It's daringly dark, too, which adds a very real horror to its industrial vistas and acts as a straight man to Oddworld's playful humour. The fact that Lorne Lanning and his team care deeply about audio can be heard within seconds of playing and can easily stick with you for a lifetime.
I think, you know, everything that goes into Oddworld's games, anything I've worked on, there's always a lot of thought that goes into pretty much every asset or every sound that goes into that. It's thought about, it's worked on, it's reworked again. And so we spend that. I think that's why sometimes Oddworld takes longer to ship games than maybe other developers, is that there's a lot of thought and a lot of love gone and a lot of effort that goes into creating each element and spending a lot of time with it. And so sound design really is no different.
Thanks to Michael for speaking to me for the sound test, but thank you too for taking the time to listen. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please make sure to subscribe or follow on whatever platform you might be listening on. There will be a new episode each week, with next week's looking at the original Binding of Isaac with its composer Danny Baranowski and guest guitarist Jules Conroy, better known as Family Jewels 7X. It's the first of several appearances from Danny, and Jules can also be heard in an upcoming edition about Crypt of the Necrodancer. All our Patreon supporters can receive early access to next week's episode for a single dollar, so head on over to patreon.com/_secretcave if you'd like to pledge your support and hear next week's episode right now. Of course, this doesn't apply if you're already a patron and hearing this episode in advance. Goodbye.